I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Gut Glow Podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
Although I went through a tough time, it showed me how someone could still love me at my lowest and at my weakest, because the love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
So deep down, we all know what we want in life. We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a healthy and fulfilled life where self-care is a top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season of the Gut Glow Podcast is brought to you with thanks to Ireland's leading pharmacy chain, Lloyd's Pharmacy. Do you suffer from allergies or hay fever? Lloyd's Pharmacy has a wide range of medicated and non-medicated solutions to give you the relief you need to enjoy the rest of your summer. Visit lloydspharmacy.ie for all your allergy and hay fever needs. Lloyd's Pharmacy, say hello to the people that know. Thanks for joining me on the Gut Glow Podcast today. Really exciting episode about the blue zones of the world. And I'm so excited for you to hear my conversation with Dan. First, a little personal update. Our embryos have left the country, which is really exciting. We have been moving towards this step for the last 9 months. And we got the news on Wednesday that our embryos had been picked up from Beacon Care Fertility and were on their way to Ukraine. They were brought to Ukraine by IVF couriers, and we got a full report about their journey over and a full report on the temperatures and things like that. So, oh, it was so exciting. It was a weird feeling on Thursday knowing that they were on the way to Ukraine and they were traveling across the world. And it's so unexplainable, the feeling of a part of you kind of making its way to a different country and then hopefully coming back as a baby. So we are so excited. It feels like a really special week for the three of us. So yeah, that's our update. It's been a long road to get here, very emotional, but we're really excited. And the next step is to hopefully find a surrogate mother and get going on having baby number two. So wish us luck, and thanks for all the support along the way. It means so much to us, and all those messages that we get really keep us going and keep our spirits up. So thank you so much. So on to my podcast with Dan Buettner now. So Dan is a New York Times bestselling author. I first came across his work earlier this year as I watched a lecture he presented on the Blue Zones, and I was so fascinated by his work. So he teamed up with National Geographic and discovered the five places in the world called the Blue Zones where people live the longest, healthiest lives. So these little regions are in tiny little parts of Italy, Greece, Costa Rica, California, and Japan. So over a number of years, Dan went to the Blue Zones to study the people and tried to figure out, you know, what were they doing differently? Why were so many people in these regions living to over 100 and not suffering from cancer and heart disease and all the things that we are surrounded by these days, I suppose. So he found 9 common lifestyle habits that these people have. And I'll share them with you now. Number 1 is to move naturally. Number 2 is to have a sense of purpose. Number 3 is a downshift. So that's, you know, reducing stress levels. The 80% rule, which is eating till you're 80% full. Plant slant, most of these people eat a plant-based diet. Wine at 5, they enjoy happy hour and relaxing and having a catch up with friends and neighbours. Number seven is a sense of belonging. So they walk out their front door, they're surrounded by loving people. They are part of communities. They have faith. They belong. Number eight, loved ones first. So they're very close to their families. They really believe in keeping young people with the older generation. So the grandmother effect, and Dan will talk to us about that in the podcast. And number nine, the right tribe. So surrounding yourself with people who are going to bring out the best in you. So I think these days we can put ourselves under a lot of pressure to be well in terms of exercise and diet and strict regimes. And the beauty of this podcast is it's actually just about being happy, relaxing, having fun. So I'm so excited to dive into this podcast now. And Dan explains it really well. And he's got a few little tips in there on how we can live a healthy, long life full of happiness, which I love. So I hope you enjoy it. Dan, welcome to the Good Glow podcast. I'm so excited for this conversation. And I just know my audience will really get a lot out of this chat that we're having today. So thank you.
I'm absolutely thrilled. It's thrilled, by the way. I'm sitting on at a lake in rural Wisconsin, and to be able to connect with Ireland, it's a thrill.
Oh, it's so good. And I've been following your work over the last year, really. I've kind of heard about the Blue Zones and started looking into it more and talking to my friends and family about your work. So just for anybody who's unfamiliar with the Blue Zones, can you just tell us a little bit more about them?
It started out as a National Geographic project to, in a sense, reverse engineer longevity. We know that only about 20% of how long you live, or the average person lives, is dictated by your genes. And what that really means is, you know, even if your parents died young, it doesn't mean you're doomed to a similar fate. Using modern demographic methods, you can actually pinpoint areas in the world where people are living statistically longest. So in other words, these people have achieved the longevity outcome we want, which is to make it into their mid-90s or 100s, largely free of chronic disease. And we're able to confirm that mathematically. So once you find these areas, then there are all kinds of established techniques to identify the common denominators. So what's explaining longevity in places where people are living the longest? And knowing that only 20% of your personal formula for living, how long you're going to live, is dictated by your genes. To learn these lessons from long-lived people allows you to influence 80% of how long you're going to live. I don't know if that was too much of a mouthful, but the long and short of it is there are very clear lessons that the longest-lived people teach us, and I believe my team and I have uncovered them.
Wow, and that must have been such an exciting journey for you to go on. I mean, this is your life's work, and so fascinating. And the thing that I found the most interesting is that there's pockets of blue zones from around the world. So it's not just in Italy where there's, you know, a Mediterranean diet. There's blue zones in Japan, America. So just for anybody listening, so what makes up a blue zone?
So essentially the way we identify it, we go back 100 years and look for birth certificates, say from 1920 to 1925. People were born during that time. And then we follow them for a century and we see how many are still alive today. And we correct for immigration and emigration, so people coming in and leaving an area. And what allows then these sort of mathematically inclined demographers to do is to identify the concentration of centenarians or the life expectancy at middle age. We really don't pay too much attention to infant mortality because you can't do too much about that. But as a middle-aged person, you can do a lot to influence how long you're going to live. So once again, we found the statistically longest lived areas. So for example, the highlands of Sardinia, Italy, an area called the Noro province, we found the highest concentration of male centenarians in the world, about 11 times more men reaching age 100 than you would expect to see in, say, Ireland. In Okinawa, Japan, we found a cohort of women over 60, where there are 30 times more females reaching 100 than, say, Ireland. So something amazing is going on here. So the point being is we have places where manifestly people are living longer. We know only 20% of that explanation lies in their genes. So my team set out to find out what is explaining that other 80%. And we believe we've come up with a de facto formula for longevity. So this isn't something that we found in test tubes or in petri dishes. These are among real people living real lives. And you can see very clearly the patterns that these people live over the course of a century. And most remarkably, you can find the common denominator. So in places where people are reaching age 100, we see the same things happening over and over and over again. And we believe that's a strong indication of what the rest of us might want to do if we also want to live a long time without chronic disease. And when I say chronic disease, I mean heart disease, avoidable heart disease, type 2 diabetes, certain types of cancer, mostly cancer of the GI tract or sort of the digestive system, and then dementia. So these are all mostly avoidable by doing the right things. And we found the people who've done the right things, and now we just spread the word.
And you must have come across so many amazing people on that journey. And I think we're all becoming a little bit more aware of our wellness. And I know in Ireland, especially, you know, people are almost waking up and saying, especially with COVID, you know, how do I want to live my life? And I've slowed down a little bit, and how can I bring that forward? And you speak about so much like, you know, love and connection and things like that. And I think we have learned that, you know, your wellness is not just diet and exercise. It's so much more than that.
Yeah, that's right. First of all, I think there's so many competing views of what we should eat, what we should do. I think most people who are looking for a formula for wellness are more likely to be confused than anything else. I mean, you turn on the TV and look in the newspapers, and there's a new diet all the time and a new insight. And the point here in these blue zones, these people have been doing the same things for hundreds or even thousands of years. So there's some time tests to it. So what do we see in the blue zones? What are people doing to live a long time? Well, let's start with diet. I think diet is probably 60% of the formula for living longer. And by the way, let me just establish some ground rules here. My focus on longevity is within the capacity of the human machine. So everybody listening right now, this approach doesn't require you to get hormone therapy or take supplements or think about some genetic modification. This is the capacity of your body. So women listening out there right now, the average maximum life expectancy, so if you have an average set of genes, you should be able to make it to a healthy age, 94 or 95, at the current level of science. For men, it's about 92 or 93. If people are telling you they can help you live to 100, they probably have their hand in your pocket and are selling you some snake oil. But the reality is, in people in Ireland, life expectancy is more like about 80. So those of you listening, you're probably leaving 12 to 15 years of good life on the table. And the reason I say good life is because people who make it into their 90s or 100s are less likely to be suffering from big diseases. There's this notion called morbidity. That's the disabled time at the end of your life. The cohort of people who are dying in their 60s, they're usually suffering for about a decade. They have lung cancer or they have diabetes. People are making it to 100 or a healthy 95. They've eluded these diseases and really do die of what used to be called old age, which is essentially your body's, you know, we all have kind of a planned obsolescence, for lack of a better word. We're built to live about 95 years, as far as we know right now. And then, you know, the machine just go to bed one night and you don't wake up the next morning. That's the way you want to die, preferably after sex. But can you say sex on your podcast?
Yeah, definitely.
I wish you could see her. You're blushing. Sorry about that. This is PG, by the way.
No, it's okay. So when we look at these people, there's a number of things that they're doing throughout their life. And something you speak about a lot is that they're not focused on longevity. They're not trying to live as long as they can.
Yeah, I think the most surprising finding and the one that underpins all of my books is that if you try to change your behavior, lifestyle or behavior modification, diets or even exercise programs, they fail for almost all the people, almost all the time in the long run. But people in blue zones aren't on diets. They're not on exercise programs. They're just living their life. So the big insight here is if you want to live longer, don't try to change your behavior, change your surroundings. And it's very clear in blue zones, people live in cities where every time they go to work or to a friend's house or out to eat, it occasions a walk. They have gardens out back. Loneliness. If you're lonely, if you don't have three friends you can count on a bad day with whom you can have a meaningful conversation, that shaves about 8 years off your life expectancy. And here in America, we have a pandemic of loneliness. People imploded in their apartments and their homes, partially because of COVID, but also because they're on their devices. In blue zones, the option to be lonely isn't there. Every time you step out of your house, you're bumping into your neighbor. You're expected to show up to village festivals. They tend to be religious, so they expected to show up to church and so forth. They're born with a sense of purpose. They use vocabulary like ikigai or plan de vida. So if you know why you wake up in the morning and you're on fire to do what you love to do every day, that adds about 7 years of extra life expectancy over being rudderless. In America, for example, we're not given this sense of purpose. We have to proactively find it. In blue zones, it comes with mother's milk. Ikigai, plan de vida, people know what their place is in the community and what's expected of them. It's a combination of a purpose and responsibility that imbues their entire lives. So I would say, though, the most important aspect that's adding years to their life is their diet. Probably 60% of their longevity is explained by what they eat. So in one of my books, the Blue Zone Solution and the Blue Zone's Kitchen, both New York Times bestsellers, we teamed up with Harvard University to do what's called a meta-analysis, which is sort of a century-long average of what people in blue zones have been eating. Because if you want to know what a centenarian ate to live to be 100, you can't just ask them what they had for breakfast yesterday or last week. People don't remember. Mm-hmm. You have to know what they were eating as little children and as teenagers and young adults and middle age and newly retired and today. And when you take that from all five blue zones and you average it out, you find that they were eating a 90 to 100% whole food plant-based diet. And by the way, it was a very high carbohydrate diet. About 65% of their dietary intake came from complex carbohydrates. And the five main pillars of every longevity in the diet in the world, whether you're in Okinawa, Japan, or Sardinia, Italy, are whole grains, whole grain wheat, whole grain corn, whole grain rice, sourdough bread we see in Sardinia, for example, which is just whole grain fermented, greens of all kinds. We've pretty much lost the tradition of eating greens, but all these blue zones, people go in their field out behind their house and gather greens that look like the weeds we weed whack from our backyard. But they put them in beautiful salads and beautiful pies and so forth. Even dandelion greens, which in America here we spend millions to get rid of, they end up in salads. And it turns out that dandelion greens are very high in antioxidants and they're diuretics, which is good for heart disease. They're eating tubers, sweet potatoes and normal potatoes, handful of nuts a day, which is worth about 2 years of life expectancy over not eating nuts at all. And the longevity all-stars, the cornerstone of every longevity diet in the world is beans. They eat about a cup of beans a day. Mm. And if you're eating a cup of beans a day, it's probably adding about 4 years to your life expectancy. And we don't know if that's because it's the fiber or the potassium in beans, or if it's because you're getting your protein from beans, you're therefore not getting it from bacon or pork chops or all these unhealthy meats that we're increasingly eating. In blue zones, they do eat meat, but only 5 times a month. So a small portion, about once a week, maybe once a month, a celebration, you eat a little bit more. Very little fish, believe it or not. Maybe a couple eggs a week. And when it comes to what they're drinking 6 glasses of water a day, tea. Good news for most of us, they're drinking coffee before noon. It seems to be one of the few indulgences we can enjoy with impunity, a very high source of antioxidants and associated with lower rates of diabetes and Parkinson's disease. And then a little bit of wine. We're big fans of Blue Zones wine, Cannonau from Sardinia, that has about 3 times the levels of antioxidants of any known wine in the world. And that's consumed perhaps a little bit more than sparingly, a few times a day, among the longest lived men in Sardinia. So,
are they drinking wine every single day?
Well, of course not everyone. And I'm going to caveat by saying that if you're not drinking now, don't start. But I will say that in the blue zones, it's very clear that people are drinking 2 or 3 glasses a day. And they're also making it to advanced ages, 90s and 100s, largely without chronic diseases. So it seems to work for them. One of the interesting observations, perhaps, is that when you're drinking a little bit of wine, you're probably lowering your cortisol levels, which is a stress hormone, especially if you're drinking at the end of the day. And when you drink wine with a plant-based, whole food plant-based meal, you also about quadruple the antioxidant absorption. So in some respects, it can actually be healthier to drink a little wine with the meal than to drink water.
Wow.
But wine, of course, is one of those things, you know, you can't save up all week long and, you know, drink 14 on the weekend and think you're going to get by with it, but a couple glasses a day. And if you're really interested, Google Blue Zones wine, and it will take you to a few sites where you can read about it.
So fascinating. Dan, can you tell us a little bit about daily rituals? Are these people, you know, meditating? What sort of things do they do on a daily basis?
Glad you asked that question. So we put this in the general category of downshifting or de-stressing. So if you're chronically stressed, you're triggering the inflammatory response, which is the root of almost all diseases of aging. Heart disease, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, they all have their roots in being constantly triggered, in a hurry, worried, angry, stressed out. In blue zones, they still suffer these conditions of just being human, but they have ways to shed that stress. So, and it's different in every place, but there's clear times every day where they're downshifting. So in Okinawa, they have ancestor veneration. They'll start their day in front of a shrine in their living room that reminds them of their ancestors, reminds them that they're just not a point in the horizon, but part of a continuum. That helps them relinquish their worries of the day to something else. The Adventists, they'll start their day with prayer. The Costa Ricans and the Icarians take a nap. And we know people who take a nap have about a third lower rate of heart disease. You're taking a 20-minute nap 5 days a week, lower rate of heart disease. And then the Sardinians, they're socializing a lot, and they're doing happy hour every day, essentially. They'll flood into the streets about 5 o'clock, no matter what else they're doing, and they'll meet with friends and drink a little bit of wine. This is a practice I've adopted with some vigor. They're not just motoring through life. You know, so many Americans, they wake up stressed. They drive through an hour of traffic. They get to a job they don't like. They drive back through traffic. They're in a hurry to get the dinner together for their kids. They're driving their kids to soccer practice. They come home exhausted. They watch a couple hours of bad TV, and then they don't get enough rest. And they wonder why they're developing these diseases of ages. Blue zones, we clearly see that slowing down, punctuating your day with times where you can downshift. And a lot of us achieve it through meditation. I'm a big fan of meditation, but there's all kinds of other more traditional forms of quote unquote meditation that worked just as well.
I'll get straight back to my conversation with Dan, but first I want to thank Lloyd's Pharmacy, especially today on the last episode of season 9, for supporting the Good Glow. Do you struggle to perfect your skincare routine? Find it hard to choose the best products to suit your skin? Well, you don't need to. Lloyd's Pharmacy offer one-to-one private consultations with their highly trained skin consultants who can advise the best routine and products to suit your skincare needs. Pop in and ask today. Many of their pharmacies are open late and on weekends. For a full list of services and the latest mega deals, head over to lloydspharmacy.ie. When it comes to love and connection, and only recently have I really understood that that is such an important part of wellness and self-care, is to have that loving connection. Your home environment is so important, your relationships. What can you tell us about the importance of that?
Yeah, so in Blue Zones, you see very clearly they're keeping their aging parents nearby. You put your aging parents in a retirement home, it shaves 4 to 6 years off their life expectancy, as opposed to keeping them nearby. And keeping aging parents nearby is also good for the children. Something called the grandmother effect has shown that children have lower rates of mortality and disease if they have a grandmother or grandfather in their life. And then investing in your partner, it's huge. Making that effort to get out, to find that somebody who you can love and who will love you back. Again, it's worth about 6 years of life expectancy over trying to shoulder the burdens of everyday life by yourself.
When it comes to your work, and you have thousands and thousands of people following you, you've had so much success with your brilliant books. What do your followers want? What do you think they're looking for?
Most of my followers, I think, are fed up with the empty promises of diets and power drinks and CrossFit and all these other promises we get every year, usually after the holidays, and are looking for a more permanent. What Blue Zones promises, and I've written the Blue Zones Solution, the Blue Zone Kitchen, Blue Zones Challenge is coming out in December, but all my approach draws from evidence-based practices from people who've achieved the outcomes we want, and it shows you how to set up your surroundings so that the healthy choice is the easy choice. And so I have a constant flow of evidence-based suggestions on how to set up your home, your work life, your social life, to a certain extent, your internal life, so you can forget about it like people in Blue Zones do, and a healthier life will ensue. And I have a Instagram handle, at Dan Buettner. I try to constantly refresh that with the latest insights on, again, how to set up your life for longevity, not try to change your mind, change your surroundings.
Oh, that's so brilliant. I love that. And yourself, Dan, do you try to live this Blue Zone lifestyle, even though you don't live in a Blue Zone? Can you kind of take that on in your home environment?
Absolutely. So first of all, there are a number of key aspects in Blue Zones that you can find in cities where you live. Blue Zones are consummately walkable. There's easy access to healthy food. There's easy access to nature. You're in places where you're likely to bump into people and have these sort of spontaneous interactions that lead to friendships. So I very intentionally live in very walkable communities. Miami, Florida, South Beach, Santa Barbara, Minneapolis. These are all very Blue Zones-esque. You know, I eat a whole food plant-based diet, maybe a little bit of fish occasionally, but I don't eat meat anymore. It's very clear that if you're eating meat daily, you're about tripling your chances of cancer and heart disease and diabetes. And the research on that is absolutely indisputable. I put a lot of time and effort and energy and love in my friends and my family. That's a priority for me. This Sisyphean treadmill of always trying to reach for more money or fame, it's become very clear to me that's an empty pursuit, mm-hmm. success of which always lies on an ever receding horizon. So I'm in the here and now.
And you've worked with Oprah in the past. Do you mind me asking what that was like?
I've been on Oprah twice. Yeah, I did a whole hour with her. I actually, before Dr. Oz has his own show, she sent Dr. Oz as a correspondent. He came with me to Costa Rica and Loma Linda. And, you know, she's a hard worker, and she makes her Her staff worked very hard, but she is as lovely as can be. It's very hard to get on her show, and it's very hard to have guests on her show. And she invited my mom and my aunt, and they just loved it. And then I wrote another book called The Blue Zones of Happiness, and she had me back on a second time. And my mom and this is like 3 years later. My mom and aunt were in the audience, and she was scanning the audience during the show. She said, "Oh my God, Dan's mom and aunt are back." So not only just an absolute rock star when it comes to media, but she's also a caring, loving individual.
Yeah, that's so good to hear. I read her book, What I Know For Sure, Sitting in Chemotherapy. And like, I feel like her words just put me on this path, you know, and she's had such an incredible impact on so many people. So yeah, it was great to see that you'd worked with her. And when you've written all of these books, and in your books you tell stories of the people that you've met along the way, is there anybody in the blue zone that has had a kind of lasting effect on you that you will remember forever?
One in particular, there was a woman named Kamada-san who was 106 years old in Okinawa, beautiful smile. Every day, four or five of her friends came over. They belonged to her Moai, which is a committed social network. They sat around in kimonos and they gossiped. They drank sake. They argued about who that hot guy liked best back in 1941. And there were five centenarians among them. They still get together every day. The importance of connecting socially. She was the spiritual leader of her village. So her ikigai, her sense of purpose was making sure that young people had spiritual guidance. And she's worrying about that at 102 is when I met her last. And then I got to meet her great, great, great granddaughter. So these are two women separated in age by 101 and a half years. And when I asked her, the little baby was sort of bouncing on her lap. And I said, "What does it feel like, Kamada, to hold a descendant that's more than a century younger than you?" And she put her head back and she said, "It feels like leaping into heaven." And you know, before I did this project, I had a kind of a fear of aging. And to spend time, and I spend days with Kamada-san, it actually makes you look forward to getting older and the wisdom that comes from that and the satisfaction and the joy and the friendships. As long as you're doing the right things on the journey, there's really a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah. And we do have that fear, don't we, of growing old and, oh, it's my birthday and, oh, I don't want to tell you how old I am, when it should be embraced, shouldn't it? You know, I'm still here, you know, wake up every day and say, I'm back for more.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. And I can tell you that statistics support that. So, you know, we typically end up pretty optimistic and happy in our 20s. You know, the world is before us, our career, marriage, kids. But then as we move through middle age, we often get disillusioned. You know, we'll never become prime minister, or never become a billionaire. Some of these dreams are dashed. And typically, our least happy years are between the ages of 50 and 55. This is on a worldwide average. But then something interesting happens. It's called a U-shaped curve. And our happiness begins to climb at age 60 and continues to climb. And by the time you're about 80, our happiness, as long as you keep your health, you're as happy as an 80-year-old as you are when you're a 20-year-old. And it continues to climb. And the happiest cohort are the centenarians. So you really do want to start thinking now about doing the things that will make you to live to 100, because nobody knows what if there's an afterlife. You want to optimize your time on this planet right now. You want to experience and live richly and connect spiritually and have vigor and vitality, but you also want to experience the happiness that comes with the wisdom of living to 90 or 100 and the satisfaction. You want to be interested,
yes,
and interesting for a century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there is so much to look forward to in life, and not to just say, oh, well, you know, I'm a certain age, it's all downhill from here. It's the opposite.
It's not.
If somebody is listening to this and they're like, I can't stop smoking, I can't stop scrolling, I can't stop stressing, I don't know what my life's purpose is, where do you begin?
All right, let me start with purpose. So when you really think about it, purpose is the combination of a few things. It's knowing your values. It's knowing your passions, what you like to do, what you're good at, and then an outlet. So I prescribe a very simple exercise where you sit down with a blank screen or a pad of paper and you write these four columns. And you just two words, what are my values? Next column, what do I like to do? Next column, what am I good at? And then after studying those three columns, then the fourth column, you start writing outlets for them. Where can I put my purpose, my life meaning to work? And very few people actually find purpose in their job. So you often have to think about a hobby, or really the best place is a philanthropy or volunteering. But they're very good books by an author named Richard Leider, if you want to find your purpose. I would say one of the most important things you can do, the whole smoking, we know that if you're obese and unhealthy, if you smoke, if you do drugs, if you're lonely, if you're unhappy, they are all measurably contagious. If everybody you're surrounding yourself with are smoking cigarettes, you're 70% more likely to smoke. So I'm a big fan of curating a social circle, proactively finding three or four people who you interact with daily who, number one, their idea of recreation is playing tennis or gardening or walking. These are people who are engaged with life, people with whom you can have a meaningful conversation, people who you can call on a bad day and they'll call you and they'll care about you. You can cry on the phone and they'll actually listen. But most importantly, you want these four people to eat healthy. You want them to be non-smokers. They're not abusing drugs. They're generally happy people. It's not a bad idea to have a vegan or vegetarian in this immediate circle too, because learning how to cook plant-based food and eating it, being compelled to eat it because you're with a person who doesn't eat, you know, pork chops or what do you eat in Ireland? Roast beef or something, or corned beef. Yeah. horrible. It's like, unless you're starving. So the point being is building that immediate social network. Yeah. So I think that's a starting point. And then as far as I keep coming back to food because it's 60% of the formula. Get yourself a good plant-based cookbook. Of course, I'll advocate the Blue Zone Kitchen, but you're never going to learn how to eat to live to be 100 unless you find a half a dozen recipes that you like. You don't get people to change their diet by guilting them or incenting them, offering them a free t-shirt or telling them the health consequences or the greenhouse gas consequences or the suffering they're causing by eating their meat and cheese and eggs and so forth. The way you get them is you make sure you give them, afford them the right recipes, afford them the time to try a half a dozen or 10 recipes until they can find a handful that they love. Then you never have to talk them into it again. I make this Sardinian minestrone, three beans, beautiful garlic, olive oil, tomatoes. It is absolutely a feast for your microbiome and your body. I've served it to entire cities of thousands of people, and they came back for the recipe. Once people taste that, I don't have to talk them into trying it again. And once you find that handful of recipes you love, you'll keep eating. So taking the time to find those dishes that you love.
Yeah, it's such a good tip, because I've started cooking loads of plant-based recipes, and like I'm putting it in front of my husband, and he's the type of guy who just wants to eat like, you know, chicken and things like that all the time. Ouch. But now he's like, oh my God, that was really nice. That lentil bolognese was gorgeous and so tasty. And yeah, it's just about expanding your mind a little bit and being open to trying new things, and you never know what you could like along the way. The last question, Dan, that thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it so much. Are you good at staying in the present moment? I feel like I hold myself to ransom, like worrying. Have you conquered how to stay in the present moment?
There's a few tricks that work for me. Number one, I turn off all the bings and rings and bells in my handheld device, my iPhone. That's an easy thing you can do. I try to take the electronics out of my bedroom, which at least that one area there, I'm not constantly distracted. I meditate about 10 minutes every day. There's okay. This waking up app that I recommend. I have nothing to do with it, but it's a fabulous way to start learning how to meditate. I take a nap, and that really helps. I try to hang out with chill people. Religion's not a bad idea either. An hour a week when you're focusing on something other than yourself and your own set of problems, that helps.
I saw on your Instagram, you were out on a boat and, you know, surrounded by friends, and that's obviously so important to you.
I make that a huge priority. I actually had 14 people over for the weekend, and we had a game weekend. So we busied ourselves playing games, and I think all of us forgot whatever problems we have in our life for at least that 4 hours.
Oh, amazing. Dan, I'm going to leave the links to your books, to your Instagram page in the episode notes of this podcast. I'd encourage everyone to follow you because it's so nice to just learn about your life and your work, and you're doing such an amazing job. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you, Georgie. And I'm actually very good about answering people's questions. So if you follow me at Dan Buettner and leave me a direct message with a question, I'm very happy to answer you personally. And I'm just so thrilled that you introduced me to your tribe, your Moai, as we call it. And such a pleasure to meet you. You're doing a great service for Ireland and the rest of the world, those of us who get to meet you. And I can tell you, if you've never met Georgie, I feel like we had a half-hour connection here, and you're just a lovely human being. And I'm sending you a big, big telephonic hug from across the Atlantic.
Oh, my God. Oh, thank you so much. I feel like on cloud nine after that. I appreciate it so much.
You're the best.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Lloyd's Pharmacy. That's it from season 9. I can't believe it. This season has gone by so fast, but I'm so grateful to all of my amazing guests and you for listening to my podcast. It means so much. Thanks as well to Lloyd's Pharmacy for all the support this season. It was so great to work with such a brilliant brand, and I will be back very, very soon. So I'll talk to you then.